Hey, Clubhouse Conversation listeners, welcome to a very special archival episode.
We recorded this episode earlier this year before we settled into our News of the Week format, but we really want to share it with you anyway.
So sit back and enjoy the dulcet tones of your favorite hosts talking about technology and theater. Why have just one conversation when you could have conversations around conversations about conversations? I know. You were thinking the exact same thing.
Tech Theater Clubhouse Conversations is a podcast to continue that conversation every week on Clubhouse. Oh, boo you. We have amazing discussions with brilliant people at the intersection of technology and theater.
We always walk away from these Clubhouse talks with our eyes open and our minds reeling about all the cool stuff we've discussed. So we decided to share our thoughts and reach even more of our friends and collaborators. So hey, I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. My background is in the theater. I love creating it, watching it, and of course, talking about it.
And hey, I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked and recovering startup guy. I think that honestly makes me the perfect co-host to Jess's creative mind. So prepare to deep dive into some theater tech nerdiness.
And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesdays, where we start conversations around the conversations about the conversations that we just had on the Clubhouse app. Joe, I can't wait for our little like jingle that's like conversations around conversations about the conversations we just had on Clubhouse. I made it.
It's beautiful.
It wasn't. This week, we asked our friend Julie Nemitz, the head of Theater Marketing Academy, to join us and talk about digital content reach. So here comes the part of the show where I grill Joe on what he thought before he has time to process it, because he really loves that. He's a big fan.
Oh my God, it's so much more fun this way. I feel like maybe we give a shout out to Julie just one more, because that was amazing. And like, yeah. I didn't know how deep and how specific and how awesome that was going to go. And so Julie, if you're listening, shout out. That was amazing. We want you back all the time.
I was actually like a little afraid as we got so nitty gritty into details around advertising and pixels and like all this tech stuff that you and I think is kind of interesting and cool. But I was like really worried that it was going to get too nerdy or like too technical or too detailed for everybody who is in our audience with us. And it absolutely didn't. We were getting all these crazy messages about how we are breaking people's brains in the best way. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad people enjoyed this.
Yeah, I had the same exact thought when we got onto like, yeah, pixeling your owned and operated website. It's like, well, do you own the destination of where your conversion is hoping to happen? And like, we were like 17 buzzwords deep, but it felt like people were keeping up and learning things. So that was kind of cool.
This is sort of like where you come from, right? So I'm really curious. For us, it's like in the theater. This is like a lot of new information, but you sort of lived hard in this world, in the startup world. So I'm really curious what you thought across this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. There were so many touch points that I could sort of like map back to like when I worked at Maker Studios, which was this sort of platform of YouTube creators coming together to you know, cross-pollinate and grow their audiences. And, you know, so when Julie was talking about like, oh, it's really important to collaborate and have partnerships and to like have, you know, your audience talk to that audience and to grow audiences because you're talking with other cool people. I was like, oh yeah, that's what we did with Maker. Like, that's exactly how that company grew out of nothing. And then when she was talking about like, you know, audience ownership and the idea that like Facebook reach has been decreasing and decreasing and decreasing. And like that flashed me back to like 2016 when I think there was an algorithm update on Facebook. And it literally killed a whole bunch of different publishers that were 100% dependent on Facebook traffic for all their ad revenue.
Wow.
So like, I can't remember what it's called, like Little Things or something like that. It was like the famous case. It was just like this really cutesy, upbeat website that, you know, had lots of articles that got really great search traffic and really great social traffic. And then when Facebook changed their algorithm, their traffic from Facebook dropped off the map to basically nothing. They couldn't fulfill any of their advertising deals and the company went under like 6 months later. Craziness. And that like started the revolution of people being like, ah, crap, we can't just rely on Facebook to send us traffic anymore. Like, we have to own the relationship with our audiences, which, you know, fast forward to today and things like Substack, where, you know, individuals who are creating newsletters are collecting email addresses and having more direct relationships with the people who are either reading their content or watching their videos. And like how that's become the most important thing is owning that relationship directly and not having it be intermediated by someone like a Facebook. Because if Facebook wants to change something, then you lose everything, which is terrifying. That thing that we've talked about before, Jess, like building your business inside of someone else's business
Yeah.
leaves you at risk for any changes they want to make or any, you know, if their business objectives no longer align with yours, then you're at a loss and there goes your company.
That feels really overwhelming for like a theater company that's like, let's say in Austin or something like that. It's mid-sized, where like you're spending 90% of your time making theater. But after this year and the pandemic, right, you're going to be reaching out digitally to find new audiences and to sort of keep your current audiences engaged between shows. And so then what you have to do, you have to have a Facebook and Instagram strategy, plus maybe like a Substack or Patreon feed. And like, that's a lot of shit on top of what you're really there to do.
Yeah, I actually wanted to bring this up to ask you, because something Julie was saying about, the course that she's teaching right now was basically teaching these students how to have a presence across these social media platforms to be able to start branding themselves to then, use that as leverage for casting conversations and things like that. And I was like, is that actually taking away from the thing that they really want to do? Like, do they have to become social media marketing managers just to get, a callback or something like that? And like, how much energy is being put into building your brand socially, which is a different skill set, I'd imagine. But I wanted to ask your opinion of that. Is that, taking away from the thing that these students actually want to be doing, which is acting, to be social media managers?
I'm going to preface my answer to this with my friend Aliyah says sometimes that like I somehow can see through the matrix with social media and most people don't see it the same way I see it.
Like, I can't wait for this.
Take it or leave it. But my opinion about it is that we are in a weirdly exciting place to take advantage of that, because you just don't work all the time. Like, you can't, unless you're the 1% of a theater maker, you're just not working 24/7, 6 days a week all year on making theater. And so there's a lot of time in between. And I personally see social media or video making, whatever it is, as a way to keep telling stories between the theater jobs, right? So like, yeah, between my jobs, I'm going to be taking class, right? Like, and sort of maybe doing a reading on Monday nights or whatever it is, but it's still not like all of my time. And where you might have been formerly spending the between job times on your survival job and like going out and stuff, like now we have, I think of like, I can't believe I'm saying this, I always reference Drew Ford, that viola kid, but like I think about him when I talk about this, because like he plays viola and has a big Grammy gig once a year, right? Like has like however many gigs, but between that he started making amazing videos and like TikTok content, and so now he tells stories all the time whether someone's given him a big job or not. So I don't know. I think that's my standpoint on it.
I like that. I like that it's like, it's letting you flex the same sort of skills and the same sort of outlet for creativity versus being like I have to learn a whole new set of skills just to have the outlet for my creativity.
Yeah. And I think that, well, this is something I was thinking about when we were in this conversation and we didn't get to. I think that the thing that goes part and parcel with that viewpoint on it that's tough is like this conversation around like getting likes on Instagram, and things like that. Like, you're not necessarily guaranteed to get feedback on that, right? And I think about even with Broadway Unlocked, our YouTube channel, which has been around since 2014 or something like that, like we've made over 100 videos and they're all they're all fun and crazy and whatever. And some of them the majority of them have 20 views, right? Like, or 40 views. But then there's the ones with like famous people that have tens of thousands and, just tons and tons of views. And really the only difference is it had someone famous in it that people were searching for. So I think like the way that these platforms work and process the stories that you're telling, You just have to be in it to make yourself happy and hope, that there's a long-term effect. But that's at my standpoint. I don't know. There's probably another way that I don't know about that isn't just like a hope and a dream and I'm telling a story and it's fun.
How do we go viral, Jess?
Yeah.
I just want to go viral.
Exactly.
Sounds like famous people.
Oh, man. Well, that's kind of what Julie was saying in the conversation about like collaborations, right? And yeah. Word of mouth.
Yeah. It also makes me hopeful for things like TikTok, where their algorithm is specifically defined around giving acceleration to people who aren't just famous, or, hey, it has, I don't actually know how the algorithm works, but the beauty of their For You page is that like anyone can get on it and anyone can kind of like go viral as a result of it. It just needs like a little bit of traction and then boom, it jumps up to like millions of views and reach across, you know, the whole world. I don't know. I don't want to go too deep into algorithmic gatekeeping again, but that I feel like is going to be a theme for me forever as long as the internet exists and there's creativity happening inside of it. But yeah, like if you need to be famous to get famous, then what's happening? What's happening in these social media channels?
Oh, God. What did you, like, out of all the things that we talked about, from your perspective, what do you, is there like one, two things, whatever it is, the biggest things that you hoped people took away from that conversation that were listening?
Yeah. So when friend of the show, friend of the company, friend of the what? I want a friend of the thing, Jess. I've just decided.
Friend of the show.
I love it.
Friend of Tech Tuesdays.
Friend of Tech Tuesdays, Shane Salk came up and was talking about his own strategy with his podcast. And he was talking about, you know, sort of multi-channel engagement strategies. And that's how we got back into this world of like owning people's emails is just super, super valuable. I think that was the most interesting. And with email specifically, like, I don't think it's an accident that email has become like the default currency on the internet, like, especially right now, but across the past few years. And I think it's specifically because it's like an open source protocol. Like you don't need to have a Facebook account to get an email. Like I can email from any email provider to any other email provider. And, you know, Jess Ryan Creative will always get it. And like, that's the beauty of it. You don't have to be inside of Facebook to message me. You don't have to be inside of Instagram to message me. So I think that was something that Julie kept doubling down on, was like, emails are really valuable because you own it. Like you own that relationship and you don't have to go through Google to access them. You don't have to go through Yahoo. You don't have to go through any of these other social platforms to talk to your peoples. But that doesn't mean those other social platforms aren't somehow important or valuable. You know, you can build an audience on Instagram. You can build, you know, a following on Facebook. You can put content out on YouTube in order to, you know, just show people what you got and get people excited. But that, at the end of the day, the most powerful and valuable thing for directly interacting with and engaging with an audience seems to be email right now.
Yeah, that makes me think this is like a really good time. If you haven't heard or you don't know, we have two amazing producers on this podcast and for our Clubhouse show, Lucy Kirk and Natalie Renfro. They're here with us listening in. And actually, Natalie, if you wouldn't mind joining us for a second, I know that you reached out to us after that Clubhouse talk and you were like, oop, did the math. This looks right for our reach on Facebook. Can we revisit email strategy? We want to tell us a little bit about what you were thinking.
Sure. So Julie informed us that as of 2020, Facebook organic reach is down to 5%. And engagement across Facebook and Instagram is less than 1%. And I was looking at our numbers thinking, oh my God, okay, great. So I'm not just bad at my job. That's just, you know, algorithms. Because on our best day, we'll get, you know, 27 likes. And on a really good video, maybe 160 views of just like people who even saw it at all. And so thinking back to email strategy, what she brought up is those are guaranteed to hit inboxes. No algorithm is gonna, you know, wipe them off. They're gonna see them. And so, you know, if even 10 people happen to post about what you sent them and 5% of those 10 people's followers see that, that's so much more then you can reach with just your own 5%.
I do want to take just a second to like do some clapping for Natalie Renfro because we had never focused on Instagram before this year. Like we just was the one platform we didn't use very much. So I will say those 17 likes and the 25 comments is a big deal because there was nothing before and we all know it's slow going. But I just want to take a second to say that.
Thanks, Natalie. Also, I love having our producers here because they like are reacting as we talk to and they make it, they're like very validating. So thanks to both of you for being here.
What do you think about the email and social media stuff for ourselves, Joe?
I mean, I think it fits right into the model Julie was talking about. The one like question I always have is like, to what end? Like, okay, we're collecting email addresses, but to what end? Are we distributing content to them? Are we inviting them to shows to buy tickets? Are we doing all of the above? Like, what's like the strategy behind both how we convince them to sign up for our email, but then also how do we actually, you know, both provide value for them and extract value from them via that email channel?
I have no answers for you.
Great. I mean, it's got to be all of the above. You know, I think was Julie talking about her like 70-30 strategy or her three emails a week strategy and how, you know, we need to be providing them things that are interesting and engaging and fun, but then also being like, oh, here, buy a ticket to this thing, or hey, we need you to do this, or right. You know, actual asks. And I feel like we are not short on fun, interesting things to share. So
no, it does that. What you just said, the sort of understanding to what end feels like the necessary but hard part for like people who make art, mm-hmm. To get over the hump of this just feels like another thing on the stack of crap I have to make, yeah. You know, like how the heck are we going to prioritize this on top of like making live shows and doing all our social media and everything else? And if we know exactly to what end it is, then it feels better to invest time, money, personnel into it, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And that's why something like going back to my question for you earlier about like, is the social media just another, like, to what end is all the posting on social media? And, you know, your stance of being like, it's fun and it's a creative outlet and I love it and I want to do it, is like, that's an end. I'm like, that's great. But for others, if it's like, oh, if their end is, yeah, getting acting gigs or building a really big following so they can sell advertisements or something like that, like those longer term, those ones that are further off after, you know, building up a large audience feels so unattainable right now, especially, you know, right. Especially because Facebook and Instagram, you know, you have to buy to get reach or go viral, which is, you know, just easy to do.
Yeah.
But I do think like it makes me think of platforms again. I'm going to mention Substack so many times, I think, across these episodes, but
maybe Substack they'll sponsor turned, us.
Yeah, maybe. they turned the practice of the email into the revenue driving thing for the creator. They were like, hey, I have interesting things to say. If you want to hear them or read them, I guess is more accurate, then sign up. And yeah. You know, give me $1 a month or $5 a month or whatever the number is. And so seeing like, I think I'm a little biased towards like, what's the revenue stream? And so like connecting mm-hmm. it through to ticket sales or to, for individual creators to, you know, Patreon support or something like that, or even to the end of just like, hey, I'm now writing an email newsletter and you can pay me $1 or $2 to get access to one or two special things a week.
Yeah. And on the like actor director side of things, what I just was thinking about as I was listening to you sort of frame it up that way, and this is like maybe a little more concrete than my I like telling stories, I want to do it, and I don't want anybody to tell me I can't do it, is we say like with auditions, right, as an actor, it is actually a numbers game. It doesn't feel like that, but it is. Like the more auditions you go to, the more you will book, period, the end, or more callbacks you'll get or whatever. Like it may take some time to kind of get that snowball going, but it is actually a numbers game. Mm-hmm. And it feels to me like that's the real value in investing time and energy in any whatever platform of your choice, right, that shows your ability to storytell off, is that it's a different numbers game, right? If you think about like my ability to get famous, let's say, right, like to basically be generating enough work to warrant an agent who's making their living off of 10% of my living, right, then I've got to all these layers. I've got to make it to the auditions, get through the auditions, get a big job, and then be really good on stage to attract enough attention for me to get that next job because I'm starting to be of value to people as an actor, as a director, whatever it is. That like numbers game is not super scalable until you hit that inflection point where everything changes and then, you know, it's all just coming to you. Whereas like spending that time on social media, I think actually might be like a little bit of a gift, right? The fact that agent people want to see your social media presence is sometimes people internalize it as like a pain in the ass, but I think it might actually be a gift because you have a chance to play a numbers game. Like that's a bigger numbers game than the one you can play as a theater actor, director, whatever it is. And that will ultimately lead back to making the theater work that you want to work on, you know?
Interesting. Like, does it help you kind of short circuit the cycle, you know, the cycle of get audition, get callback, get book gig, be amazing, get next audition? It sounds like a way to either, yeah, short circuit it or when you go into that first audition, you have a stronger base from which you're drawing or something like that.
100%, because you can't get rid of the human element of the audition process, particularly we're talking about actors, right? But like I saw it really, or I'm sure everyone listening has seen it too, but early in my career where like when you walk into a room cold, like you just show up to an EPA or whatever, like the psychology of what's happening as you walk into that room is not in your favor, no matter what they tell you. They have been sitting there. I have done it as a director so many times. Your brain starts melting after 6 hours of listening to people sing 16 bars. It doesn't matter what you do. There's no filtering mechanism. Anyone can walk through that door. So it feels really chaotic and you don't know what you're about to get. So like as a person behind the table, you have all of this psychology you're already fighting, even if you come in and are awesome. And whereas like, for instance, if you come in with an agent from a big agency and a degree from a school, right, that makes someone go, oh yeah, sure, the switch, like you're walking in and they're having a conversation with you and shooting the shit all of a sudden when you walk in, right? You've won them the minute you walked in the door and you didn't even do anything. So yes, I think that's all to say there's a huge benefit to tipping that scale.
All right, two questions. One, what's an EPA?
Equity principal audition, which is like, there's two mandated auditions for commercial shows, for Broadway, or well, equity shows, right? Like that they have to hold that anyone can go to, which is an equity principal audition, which is for all the leads in the show where you get an appointment. Mm-hmm. And then there's a chorus call, basically chorus call for all the ensemble tracks as well. And then there are these separate gated agent auditions that not everyone can come to. You have to have an agent that gets you into it.
Yeah, this is so cool and complicated. I like didn't know what I was even asking.
Yeah.
And the second is like more of a comment than a question, but just around the idea of like gatekeepers and back to technological gatekeepers. And, you know, in that room, you're appealing to that human being, you know, the director and whoever else is on that casting panel. And like, it's the human psychology of it. And I was just like thinking like, oh, I wonder what the parallels are between like the human psychology and like, oh, if you make that person laugh, you're more likely to get in. Or if you just like are wearing something interesting that appeals to them in some way. And you're like playing to this very small, but very specific audience. And how similar or different is that from the algorithmic gatekeeping? Where it's like, oh yeah, if you make people laugh on the internet, are you more likely to go viral? Things like that.
Oh, and that's like, wild, because there's like a very famous story of Shoshana Bean when she just got out of college and she would come into an audition room and trip on purpose.
And she'd be the one who trips.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's.
Yeah. And then we got fed. I don't know, Natalie and I went to the same school, but so I don't know if it made it this far down because we're quite a few years apart. But like by the time I got to college in auditions class, that version of that had become, we got taught to walk in the room and say something interesting like, hey, mm-hmm. I'm Jess. Boy, it's sunny outside. I'm going to be singing 16 bars from blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And at the time, I remember I had never heard that Shoshana story, right? And I remember thinking, this is so fucking stupid. Why? Our professor has no idea what he's talking about. But it was there was a kernel in that from that story of Shoshana, right? Doing something interesting that wasn't audition focused. That is what you're talking about, Joe.
Yeah. It tethers you in like time and place and I don't know, appeals to other senses or something like that, such that you're more memorable.
So like basically what we have to do, I have it, you guys, is we have to start measuring or finding the place that's measuring the algorithmic gatekeeping each week and the trend on what is really like working on the platforms. And in our new weekly newsletter that we're doing through Broadway Unlocked, at the very top, it's the audition challenge, which is like based on this week's data about what is like going viral on TikTok. Like, this is your audition challenge when you walk in the room this week. Like, you know, make sure it's like funny or make sure it's about sea shanties or whatever it is.
Yeah, Neanderthals.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know. Have y'all seen the wonderful movie Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet? Wreck-It Ralph is one of my favorites. But inside of that, he has to go viral. Spoiler alert. Sorry. And they just pick a bunch of viral topics. And then he makes a bunch of videos around these specific topics. And I love this idea of like, hey, here are the things that are currently, you know, trending on TikTok or hashtags on Twitter or trending concepts in YouTube. Or just themes that we've pulled out of recent, you know, social media malarkey. And then you have to like combine as many as you can into a single interaction. That was so funny.
I'm so into it. And then tell us if you booked it.
But really, we
wrote this down, yes, because this is happening, just so you know. Great. And they're all, Lucy and Natalie are nodding yes. All right.
Don't encourage
so we're
us.
Sort of. No, please encourage us. we're sort of winding down on time. So I'm wondering if there's any other, because I know you had quite a few thoughts coming out of that conversation, any other big sort of like concepts or ideas that we didn't get to talk about on Clubhouse or here today yet?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of hit the big one for me, which was that idea of multi-channel marketing and how each platform kind of needs its own strategy, but it always has to roll up into what's the actual outcome that you want, and how does Facebook play into that, and how does Instagram play into that? Because, you know, the world of growing an audience to grow an audience and then just like fingers crossed it works out, I feel like is over. Technology companies, that used to be the trend and like still kind of is. It's like, we're just going to grow big and then we'll figure out how to make money. Don't worry about it. But that's kind of going away. And I think that's true of creators inside of these spaces too, because it's just getting harder and harder to monetize. If you are not the biggest person, if you are not the famous actor who gets all the callbacks, it doesn't have to even go into audition.
Wait, can I push back and with something on that? Yeah. That I'm not actually sure is true. It does feel like that's what's happening on Clubhouse, though. Like, that it's not actually going away. Like, in fact, I think that separately from the fact that I actually read an article yesterday about like speculation, like creator speculation on Clubhouse, which is just like, put your bets in that this is going to be big and you're going to be able to monetize it and become a leader on Clubhouse early while it's still easier. So that was what just popped into my head as you said that was starting to go away. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think that like the revenue channels for a Clubhouse sort of thing already exist. You know, sponsorships, they can easily spin up an advertising business. I don't know what their back end looks like and if they have ad technology that they could be inserting in there. But like, I think the revenue models exist for a Clubhouse like platform that they can just like kind of turn on when they want to or when they need to. But like just kind of throwing it out there and growing an audience and being like, I don't know where this is going don't think the strategy anymore.
Got it.
And then the other thing, which we did already talk about, but it's still like grating me a little bit, just that idea of like the advice for, you know, students who are trying to make it big and make a voice for themselves and using social media to do that, of like, hey, go become a social media manager or influencer, taking away from and detracting from the actual act and art of acting. And I really liked like just your perspective on it, which helped like change mine on it, which is like, oh no, it's like helping me to flex my creativity through the social channels. And it's not just about me like hacking the algorithms to get auditions, but it still just feels weird to me to be like, all right, acting, class number one, social media.
Yeah. It's so true, because I mean, and even like, I mean, there's a lot of business to understand about social media if you're going to harness it to use it effectively. But at the end of the day, especially for like someone coming out of college, if we're going to stay on the track I'm talking about, like that you referenced, which is like tell stories that you enjoy telling, you really have to like, what is a professor going to teach you? You have to understand like the mechanism of storytelling through photo and like short 60-second videos for Instagram, or you have to understand, right, daily like video making that's more cinematic or whatever on YouTube. Like, you have to understand the language of each of these and learn a new language alongside, just like you have to learn how to be a theater actor. And that does not feel like something that they're focusing on in the universities. Like, when they smash this sort of social media stuff on you, it's like as if knowing the business is enough, when in fact I think that's the miss. That's why it feels onerous, is because that's not enough. You actually have to just be making stories and know how to tell those stories with the format that you're provided.
I like the idea too that like those storytelling formats and the stories that get told into them, like those get integrated into movies and TV shows and maybe even, you know, musicals. It's like, I think of High School Zoomsicle, and it's like, that was like just directly integrated in and just showing text messages and showing social media posts, and like that as an art form is being pulled into and integrated into other art forms because it is also life. Like, we're all on these platforms and we're all using them.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, I think we're wrapping it up. So we'd love to hear what you think, dear audience. You know, the conversations around conversations about conversations only happen if you continue to change. So join the conversation with us on Twitter. Tweet at us at BYUnlocked, BYBWY Unlocked, with the hashtag TechTheaterCH, and share us your thoughts.
And then, of course, join our next conversation Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern on Clubhouse. You can raise your hand, you can jump in, get on stage with us, and share your thoughts.
And if you'd like to moderate a show with us, you can pitch us your ideas at BroadwayUnlocked.com/CH. and talk to the very nice robot Jess. You'll have to go to that website to find out what the heck that means.
It's a very nice robot Jess. Robot Jess is much nicer than real Jess. Every single topic we've talked about has been inspired by the people on our stage. And that is not just a saying or a slogan, y'all. Every single topic we've talked about has been inspired by the people that have joined us on Clubhouse. So please tweet us, hashtag TechTheaterCH, slide into our DMs, join in the conversation. And until then, we'll see you next week.